Thou spoke aloud and in French, which caused all heads to turn in her direction. Michelle, we are stationed above the planet Hermo X3, which is almost twice the size of planet Earth, and as you can see on the screen, quite similar to your world. I can't explain at any length our current mission as I am required to participate in the operation, but I will do so later. To put you on the right track, I will tell you that our mission concerns atomic radiation such as you know on Earth. Everyone seemed preoccupied, each knew exactly what to do and when to do it. We were stationary. The large panel projected an image of the center of a town. The reader should understand that this large panel was in fact, no more than an immense television screen, projecting an image in relief, so real, we could have been looking out the window of a tall building. My attention turned to another smaller screen being monitored by two of my hostesses. On this panel I could see our spacecraft, as I had already seen it in our parallel universe. As I watched, I was surprised to see, slightly below the middle of our vessel, a small sphere ejected, like an egg from a hen. Once outside, this sphere accelerated rapidly towards the planet below. As it disappeared from view, another sphere emerged in the same manner, and then a third. I noticed each sphere was being monitored on separate screens by different groups of astronauts. The descent of the spheres could now be easily followed on the large panel. The distance should have made them invisible in quite a short time, but they remained in sight, and I deduced that the camera had to have an extraordinarily powerful zoom. Indeed, the effect of the zoom was so strong that the first sphere disappeared from the right of the panel and the second from the left. We could now only see the middle one and followed its descent to the ground quite clearly. It stopped in the center of an immense square, situated among apartment buildings. There it hovered, as though suspended several meters from the ground. The other spheres were monitored in the same detail. One was above a river that flowed through the town, and the other hovered above a hill, near the city. Unexpectedly, the panel projected a new image. I could now distinctly see the doors of the apartment buildings, or rather, the doorways, for where doors should have been, were gaping openings. I remember clearly that, until then, I had not realized how odd this town was. Nothing had moved. Atomic destruction. A single word can impart what was being reflected from the panel: desolation. The street we were observing, piece by piece, was cluttered with mounds generally arranged one behind the other. Some stood apart while others lay right in the middle of the openings to the buildings. Imperceptibly, the camera zoomed closer and I soon understood that these mounds had to be vehicles that were somewhat similar in shape to flat-bottomed boats. Around me, the astronauts were attending to their desks. From each sphere emerged a long tube that descended slowly towards the surface. When the end of the tube touched the ground, a little cloud of dust rose, and I realized that the vehicles too were covered in a thick blanket of dust, rendering them formless and unrecognizable. Of course, the sphere that hovered above the river had its tube in the water. My attention was now riveted on the panel, for the scene was quite fascinating. One had the exact impression of being in the street. My attention was especially drawn to a darkened place in the entrance of a huge building. I could have sworn something moved. I also felt there was a certain agitation among the astronauts. Abruptly, and with a series of jerks, the thing emerged into the light. I was horrified by what I saw. As for my hostesses, apart from some utterances spoken more quickly, and a few exclamations in which emotion could be discerned, I must say that they didn't really seem surprised. However, what we were seeing so clearly on the panel was a horrible cockroach, about 2 meters long and 80 centimeters high. The reader will certainly have seen, at one time or another, these nasty little insects we have on Earth, particularly in hot climates, living in cupboards and damp places. You will agree that they are loathsome, but the biggest would be no more than 5 centimeters in length. Imagine then, one with the dimensions I have just described. It was truly an abomination. The tube from the sphere began to retract, yet was still a meter from the ground when suddenly, the creature hurried forward to attack this thing which moved. Untrustingly, it stopped again, when from under the building, a veritable swarm of the creatures emerged, spilling one over the other. Just then, a ray of intense blue light beamed from the sphere and swept over the group, reducing it instantly to carbonized dust. A cloud of black smoke hid the entrance to the building from view. My curiosity further aroused, I watched the other screens, but they indicated no problems. The sphere from the river was returning towards us, and the sphere on the hill retracted its tube, moved a little higher and lowered the tube again, along with a second cylinder above the sphere. I had guessed, of course, that the astronauts were collecting samples of soil, water and air. Being in astral body, I couldn't ask Thau any questions. In any case, she seemed quite busy conferring with two of the hostesses. The spheres began climbing towards us and were soon ready to be reabsorbed by our spacecraft. When the operation was complete, Thau and the two astronauts mentioned took their places opposite their respective desks. Instantly, the images we received on the panel and screens changed completely. I understood we were leaving when each one took her place. I observed that all the astronauts had a similar posture in their seats, which intrigued me. I later learned that a force field restrained them exactly as a security harness would have restrained a stuntman on Earth. The suns illuminated the planet through a reddish fog. We had left by then, and I assumed we were following the contour of the planet, at the same altitude. In fact, we could see a desert-like area passing by, dissected by dry riverbeds that sometimes crossed each other at right angles. It occurred to me they might be canals, or at least had been man-made. The panel revealed images of a town apparently intact, then it disappeared and the screen went blank. The vessel had obviously gained speed in flying over the planet, as the images on the smaller screens, showing a lake or inland sea, flashed by quickly. Suddenly, several exclamations were heard and we immediately slowed down. The panel was turned on and presented a close-up of the lake. We stopped. We could clearly see a portion of the coast and, beyond some large rocks by the lake, we could make out cube-like structures which I imagined to be habitations. As soon as we had stopped, the spheres began their operations again, just as they had earlier. We received some excellent shots taken from one of the spheres that hovered above the beach at a height I judged to be 40 to 60 meters from the ground. Its tube extended right to the shore. Very clearly, it transmitted a scene of a group of human beings. Indeed, at first sight, they were identical to people found on Earth. We had a very close view. In the middle of the panel appeared the face of a woman of uncertain age. She had brown skin, with long black hair that fell to her breasts. As we could see on another screen, she was quite naked. Only her face appeared to be deformed, she was mongoloid. When I saw her, I didn't realize she was deformed, I simply assumed we had to contend with a race of humans only slightly different from our own, as science fiction writers like to describe them, all twisted, with big ears or such like. Still, we had other shots and, in this group, the men and women seemed to resemble the Polynesian race. It was, however, obvious that more than half of these people were either deformed or eaten away by what appeared to be leprosy. They were looking towards the sphere and gesticulating, appearing to be greatly agitated. Many more were emerging from the cubic constructions which proved to be their habitations, and on which I will elaborate a little. These structures closely resembled the blockhouse of the Second World War, to which had been added very thick chimneys, installed, I supposed, for the ventilation of the buildings, which only seemed to rise about 1 meter above the ground. These blockhouses were all built with the same orientation and the people emerging from them, did so by openings on the sides which were in shadow. Without warning, I felt myself drawn backwards away from the panel. Rapidly, I passed through several partitions until I found myself once again, in the cabin where my physical being lay stretched out on the bunk, just as I had left it. Instantly, everything was completely black. How well I remember the unpleasant sensation that followed. My limbs felt like lead and when I tried to move them, It was as if I was paralyzed. I could not understand what prevented me from moving. I must confess I panicked a little and wished with all my heart that I might leave my physical body again, but I couldn't do that either. I don't know how much time elapsed before the cabin gradually became suffused with the most restful blue-green light. Finally Thau entered, wearing a different suit. I am sorry to have made you wait, Michelle, but just as your physical body recalled you, it was impossible for me to come and help you. Don't apologize, I understand perfectly, I interrupted, but I believe I have a problem, I can't move. I'm sure something in me is disconnected. She smiled and put her hand just beside mine, undoubtedly operating a control mechanism, and immediately I was freed. Again, a thousand apologies, Michelle. I should have pointed out to you the spot where the control cell for the security harness is found. All the seats, beds or bunks are equipped with them, and they are automatically activated when occupied if there is the least possibility of danger. When the vessel arrives in a dangerous area, the three security computers cause the closing of the force fields, to use their proper name. When the danger has passed, they automatically release them. At the same time, if we do want to be released in a zone deemed dangerous, or even if we simply want to change position, we have only to pass a hand or just a finger in front of the cell and the force field is immediately neutralized. When we return to our seats, we will be automatically restrained again. Now, I'm going to ask you to go and change. I'll show you where. In the room, you will see an open trunk where you can put your clothes, in fact, all that you are wearing apart from the glasses. You'll find a suit there, which you are to put on before meeting me back here. Thau bent down and taking my hand, she helped me up. I was really quite stiff. I went into the small room she had pointed out, undressed completely and put on the suit, which fitted me perfectly. This was surprising, given that, in spite of my 178 centimeters in height, I was a dwarf compared with my hostesses. A short time later, back in the cabin, Thau handed me something in the form of a bracelet, which was actually a pair of enormous glasses. A little like motorcycle goggles, they were strongly tinted. At her request, I put them on, but to do so, I was obliged to remove my own glasses, as they would have been crushed by this larger bear. They fitted exactly into the shape of my eye sockets. A last precaution, she said. Lifting her hand towards the partition, she in some way released a certain mechanism, for the intense light reappeared and I felt the intensity in spite of the strong glasses. I was again aware of the current of cool air. The lights went out. The air current could no longer be felt, but Thau did not move, appearing to be waiting for something. Eventually a voice was heard and she removed my large tinted glasses. I replaced them with my own and she asked that I follow her. We took the same route as when I followed her in astral body, and we found ourselves again, in the command room. From page 18 Thau-Uba Prophecy, one of the older astronauts, I say older but perhaps I should instead say more serious as they all appeared to be about the same age, signaled briefly to Thau who took me to a seat in front of the panel and asked that I stay there. She quickly rejoined her colleague and I realized they were very busy. As for me, I began checking whether I could in fact free myself from the force field. As soon as I sat down, I was effectively plastered to my seat, a feeling I did not like at all. Moving my hand slightly, I found I was immediately liberated for as long as my hand remained in front of the cell. The panel relayed an image of about 500 people standing on the shore and quite near the blockhouse. Thanks to the close-ups possible with our cameras, we had an excellent view of these people, who were quite naked, from the oldest down to the youngest. Again, I could see many of them were either deformed or sporting ugly wounds. They were all gesturing towards the spheres taking sand and soil samples, but no one approached. The strongest looking men were holding what appeared to be machetes or sabers. They seemed to be watching something. I felt pressure on my shoulder and turned round, surprised. It was Thau. She smiled at me and I clearly remember appreciating, for the first time, the beauty and nobility of her face. I have already mentioned her hair, which was long and silky, golden blonde in color, which fell to her shoulders and framed a face that was perfectly oval in shape. She had a large, slightly protruding forehead. Her blue mauve eyes and long curled lashes would have been the envy of many women on our planet. Her eyebrows curved upwards, similar to the wings of a seagull, adding a unique charm. Under her eyes, which sparkled and sometimes teased, was her nose, well proportioned and slightly flat at the bottom, which accentuated a sensual mouth. When she smiled, she revealed perfect teeth, so perfect, one could believe they were false. This would have surprised me. The chin, well shaped but slightly angular, suggested a willful determination that was somewhat masculine, but this did not detract from its charm. A faint shadow of hair above her upper lip could have spoiled this perfect face, were it not blonde. I see you already know how to free yourself from the force field, Michelle. I was about to reply, when an almost general exclamation made us turn our eyes to the panel. The people on the beach were surging back en masse towards the habitations and dived inside in one big rush, while a line of men had been formed armed with sabers or picks, facing the most incredible thing I could ever have imagined. A group of red ants, each the size of a cow, were rushing from behind the rocks onto the beach. They moved quicker than horses in gallop. The armed men kept glancing behind, as if to compare the speed at which the people scrambled to safety, with the advance of the ants. Already, the latter were near, too near. The men faced them bravely as, with only a second's hesitation, the first beast attacked. We could distinguish the mandibles clearly, each the size of a man's arm. At first, the creature feigned, enabling the man to strike with his saber, but he slashed only air. Immediately, the mandibles encircled his waist, severing him cleanly in two. Another pair of ants helped the first to shred him, while the rest launched their assault on the fleeing combatants, gaining rapidly on them, too rapidly. From the sphere, an electric blue beam of unbearable intensity shot out, just as the ants were upon the men. The creatures were struck dead, one after the other, with amazing precision and effectiveness. Curls of smoke rose from the burnt flesh of the animals strewn over the ground, their enormous legs convulsing in a last spasm. The beam continued its devastation among the ants, instantly and systematically annihilating the giant insects. They must have known instinctively that they could not match this almost supernatural force and fled in retreat. Everything had happened so quickly. Thou was still at my side, her face reflecting disgust and sadness, rather than anger. Another glance at the panel revealed a new scene, of the sphere piercing the ants in their hasty retreat, not only with the camera, but also with the deadly beam. The rest of the swarm, which I estimated to comprise 600 or 700, were being decimated. Not one was left alive. The sphere returned to its earlier position above the beach and produced a special tool with which it combed through the carcasses. I could see one of the astronauts seated at her desk, talking into her computer. This prompted me to ask Thou if she was supervising the work being carried out. At the moment, yes, for this work was not originally scheduled. We are taking samples of these creatures, pieces of lung in particular, in order to analyze them. We think that certain types of radiation have produced this mutant form of creature. In fact, ants do not have lungs, but the only logical explanation for their sudden gigantism is. Thou stopped short. The camera was relaying a picture of the men now re-emerging formed their shelters, gesticulating wildly at the sphere. They were holding their arms open wide and prostrating themselves on the ground. They repeated this pattern. Can they see this vessel? I asked. No. We are at an altitude of 40,000 meters, and, further, there are presently three layers of cloud between the planet and us. On the other hand, they can see our satellite, and I think it is to that they are addressing these gestures of gratitude. Perhaps they take the sphere to be a god which has saved them from ruin? It's quite possible. Can you tell me what is happening? Who are these people? It would take too long to explain to you, Michelle, especially now with so much activity in the vessel, but I can satisfy your curiosity by explaining briefly. These people are, in a way, the descendants of certain ancestors of people existing still on your planet. In fact, a group of their ancestors peopled a continent on the planet Earth about 250,000 of your Earth years ago. Here, they possessed a civilization which was very advanced but, having raised enormous political barriers between themselves, they finally destroyed themselves, 150 years ago, with the atom. Do you mean, a total nuclear war? Yes, brought about by chain reaction. We come, from time to time, to take samples in order to study the degree of radiation still existing in various regions. Sometimes too, just as a few moments ago, we help them. But they must take you to be God himself after what you did just now. Thou smiled and nodded her head. Ah yes, that's certainly true, Michelle. They take us to be gods, exactly as, on your planet, certain of your ancestors also took us to be gods. Still, they talk of us. I must have shown complete surprise, as thou threw me a look of amusement. I told you a moment ago that my explanation is somewhat premature. We'll have plenty of time to talk of this again. Besides, that's why you are with us. With that, she excused herself and resumed her place in front of a screen desk. The images were changing rapidly on the panel. The sphere was on its way up and we had a view of a whole section of the continent, on which, I noticed in places, patches of green and brown. The sphere took its place again within the vessel and we departed. We flew over the planet at a breathtaking speed and I allowed myself to be imprisoned in my armchair by the force field. On the screen were images of the waters of an immense ocean. We could distinguish an island, which grew rapidly. It seemed to be a very low island although, for me, the problems of estimating dimensions were very real. The entire procedure, already described, was repeated. We stopped above the coast and, this time, four spheres left the spacecraft and descended to the island. On the panel I could see a beach which the camera was scanning. On the water's edge lay what looked like thick slabs, around which were gathered naked men, the same kind we had seen earlier. They didn't appear to have noticed the sphere and I assumed that this time, it was at a much higher altitude, in spite of the ever-closing images we were receiving. On the panel, we could now see the men carrying one of the slabs into the waves. It floated, as if made of cork. The men hoisted themselves up onto it, grabbed large oars that they handled skillfully and the boat took to the open sea. When they were a good distance from the shore, they threw out fishing lines and, to my surprise, almost immediately, pulled up fish of what seemed a respectable size. It was quite fascinating to see how these men were surviving, and to be capable of helping them, as if we were gods. I had released myself from the force field, wanting to go and study the other screens that were receiving different images. Just as I was about to venture from my seat, I received an order, without hearing a sound, "Stay where you are, Michelle." I was stupefied. It was as if the voice was inside my head. I turned my head in Thau's direction and she was smiling at me. I decided to try something, and thought as hard as I could, "Telepathy is great, isn't it, Thau?" "Of course," she replied in the same manner. "It's wonderful. Can you tell me what the temperature is down there at the moment?" She checked the data at her desk. 28 of your degrees Celsius. By day, the average temperature is 38 degrees. I said to myself if I was deaf and mute, I could communicate with Thau quite as easily as I can with the spoken word. "Exactly, my dear." I looked at Thau with some surprise. I had been making a personal reflection and yet she had intercepted my thoughts. I was a little put out by this. She gave me a wide smile. "Don't worry, Michelle. I was merely being playful and I ask that you forgive me. Normally, I only read your thoughts when you ask me a question. I just wanted to demonstrate what is possible in this domain. I won't do it again." I returned her smile and redirected my attention to the panel. There I could see a sphere on the beach, very close to a group of men who didn't seem to notice it. This sphere was removing sand samples from a spot about 10 meters from the group. By telepathy, I asked Thau why these people were unable to see the machine. "It's night," she answered. "Night? But how is it that we can see things so clearly? Special cameras, Michelle, something like your infrareds." Now I better understood why the images received were less luminous than on our preceding stops. However, the close-ups were excellent. Just then, on the panel, we had a shot of a face apparently that of a female. It was really horrible. The poor creature had an enormous gash where her left eye should have been. Her mouth was positioned to the right of her face and appeared as a tiny little opening in the middle of her jaw, around which were lips that seemed fused together. On the top of her head, a single tuft of hair hung pitifully. We could now see her breasts, and very pretty they would have been, if one of them hadn't had a purulent wound on the side. "With breasts like that, she must be young," I asked. "The computer puts the age at 19 years. Radiation? Of course." Other people appeared, some of whom were perfectly normal looking. There were males among them, with an athletic build, who looked to be in their 20s. "What is the age of the oldest? Do you know?" "At present, we have no record of anyone older than 38 years, and a year on this planet is 295 days of 27 hours. Now, if you look at the screen, you can see a close-up of the genital area of that handsome and athletic young man. As you will note, the genitals are totally atrophied. We've already worked out, from previous expeditions, that there are very few men actually capable of procreation, and yet, there are great numbers of children. It's the survival instinct of all races to reproduce as soon as possible. Thus, the obvious solution would be that the males capable of reproduction are studs. This man must be one of them, I think." Indeed, the camera was showing a man of about 30 years perhaps, possessing physical attributes certainly capable of producing offspring. We were also able to see many children coming and going around small fires on which food was cooking. The men and women seated around the fireplaces were taking cooked pieces and sharing them with the children. The fires seemed like wood fires, but I couldn't be sure. They were fueled by something shaped rather like stones. Behind the fires, slabs similar to the boats seen earlier, were piled and assembled so as to form shelters that looked quite comfortable. In the camera's field of vision, no trees could be seen. Perhaps they did exist, because I had noticed green patches earlier as we flew over the continent. From between two huts, some little black pigs appeared, pursued by three furious yellow dogs, only to disappear rapidly behind another hut. I was dumbfounded and couldn't help but wonder if I really was looking down on another planet. These humans looked like me, or rather, like Polynesians, and here were dogs and pigs. It was all more and more surprising. The sphere began to return, as did the other spheres, no doubt, that were being monitored by screens I couldn't easily see from my position. The operation return to ship was initiated, and all the spheres reabsorbed without incident, the same as before. I assumed we were about to leave again and so installed myself comfortably in my seat, allowing the force field to restrain me thus. Some moments later, the suns of the planet appeared, two in number, then everything dwindled rapidly, just as it had done when we left Earth. After a time, which seemed quite short, the force field was neutralized and I understood that I was free to get out of my seat. This was a good feeling. I noticed Thau heading towards me accompanied by two of the oldest, if I can say so, of her companions. I remained standing beside my seat before the three astronauts. In order to look at Thau, I was already obliged to raise my head, but when she introduced me, in French, to the elder of them, I felt even smaller. The latter was easily a head taller than Thau. I was completely astonished when she, Biestra, spoke to me correctly, although slowly, in French. She placed her right hand on my shoulder, saying, "I am delighted to have you on board, Michelle. I hope that all is well with you and that it continues to be so. May I present Latley, the second in charge of our spacecraft, myself being what you would call commander-in-chief of the Alatora.